D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and David Janes here with you. We hope you are having a wonderful Friday. Derek, David, and I are back in Nashville, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick is in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Yes.
Just a short drive from the most magical place on earth, Durham, North Carolina. But Willie is in Raleigh, North Carolina, where the Predators will take on the Hurricanes tomorrow. It's probably much colder in Raleigh than it was in South Florida. So take that, Willie.
Yes, Willie.
I was just talking to David Janes. I really wish we'd have spent the night at Fort Lauderdale last night after a great win for the Predators. That would have been nice. And they'd fly in like tonight at like 6 o'clock. That would have been ideal. It is just, it's rainy and cold here in Raleigh. And unfortunately, I don't have any wheels, Adam, or else I would have taken a spin down to Durham and see if I could sneak in to our Cameron Indoor Stadium. I would have loved to have found a way in there, just so I could take a picture and snap it to you. This is how you break into a gym as a gym rat.
Exactly.
Well, if you went there right now, nobody would be there because Duke is on its way to some place called East Lansing, Michigan, where the Blue Devils will take on some team called the Michigan State Spartans tomorrow. And we'll get into that. Don't you worry.
Oh,
there will be some sort of bet on
there is a throwdown.
That game. There will be a DVD throwdown. Duke at Michigan State tomorrow. We already have a caller. What the hell? Kevin, thank you for calling on our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Go ahead.
Yes. Kevin in Florida. Thanks, guys, for taking my call. I'm just calling about this was for Adam and Willie, but Willie's not there.
Willie's here,
but he's not here.
I am.
Okay. The hockey experts, because Rex Rode and those other guys, probably not very much. But here's my question. Last night, I was watching the game on the Panthers broadcast because I live down in Florida. And the second intermission, they had a Panthers player on there. Can't remember who it is, but he's only been on the team for like a couple days or so. But he said the system there in Florida is easy to learn and very simplistic. And I was just wondering why Florida has a simplistic system, under, you know, Paul Maurice, and Nashville has this complicated system under Brunette. I'm not knocking Brunette's system, but I'm just wondering what you guys think about that, and I'll hang up and listen.
Well, thank you, Kevin. A big question right off the bat. Willie, why don't you answer Kevin's question?
I think that's like the earliest call in DVD history.
It might be. Kevin was waiting until 3 o'clock. We appreciate that, Kevin.
Oh,
thank you for listening.
He was raring to go.
Right off the top. We will get to the Predators, but Willie, why don't you answer Kevin's question?
Just real quick, it's a great question, really, because Hal Gill and I were just recently having a conversation with Barry Trotz about that, about Paul Maurice, and it was in the aftermath of the 8-3 win for the Panthers over the Predators. And Barry Trotz was just sort of admiring the simplicity of the Panthers game. It's just direct, straight line. It's easy to prepare for, but it's hard to play against because it's just an example of a team doing things simply but doing them all really well. I think we can think of other sports where that's the case. For me, it was always Bobby Knight in Indiana. Our coach, Eddie Folger, would always say, we know what they're doing. They didn't run set plays. It was just all reading the defense, motion offense. You knew what they were doing. You didn't have to scout a bunch of things, but it was very, very difficult to play against because they were so good at the reads. So I think that's where that question is going. It's a good philosophical call. Sometimes simpler is better, although the Florida Panthers this year, because they're down some of their star players. Like I used to hear this, Derek, about Jimmy Johnson and the Cowboys, those great teams, that they didn't dazzle you with all kinds of stuff. It was simple. They had a great offensive line. They had a great running back, and they just took what the defense gave them. Sometimes if you've got the horses, simple is better.
Yeah, and you can go back to, you know, watching basketball, whether it's Yale, Princeton, teams like that, especially Princeton. it was just a bunch of, you know, top pick and rolls. They would get you in motion. It was simple offense, but it was a hard offense to go against because those guys knew every inch of that offense. It seems simplistic, but when you go against it, it's hard because if you break down in one area, they're going to expose you. So I understand what the caller's saying. And maybe sometimes, you know, I think eventually, you know, some what may look complex to the person that is watching it isn't complex to the people that are running it. And I know a lot of people look at it and say, well, why can't they just run something system? Well, simple. Well, it wasn't simple when they first learned it. It became simple once they mastered it, in a sense. So no one just goes in and say, I'm just going to run this and let it be. There's always a nuance in the simplicity which an offense or a defense is running.
The Predators just put out, by the way, an injury update. The Predators have placed Ozzie Weisblatt with an upper body injury on injured reserve. He will be out 8 to 10 weeks. Justin Barron also on IR week to week with an upper body injury. So Ozzie Weisblatt, who just scored his first NHL goal the other night, will be out for at least 8 weeks, 8 to 10 weeks with an upper body injury. But let's
so tough because he's such a special story. I mean, everything he's been through, and he breaks through. He was playing his best hockey of the year. He gets his first goal. He has that magical moment. And then it was his very first shift last night. He had just come into the game, and he went after a big hit. He got caught awkwardly, and I think you knew after a minute or two that it was not something you could shake off. So that's a tough break for Ozzie. But I think he is, if you're looking at pluses in a season, you know, they're playing really well right now. I'm very encouraged from what I'm seeing. But the key is young players making progress, and Weisblatt was making a lot of progress. Not as a superstar, but as a guy that looked like he was finding his role in the NHL, and now he's going to be out for a while.
So let's talk about the game last night. Predators win 2-1 in overtime. Steven Stamkos scores the game winner in 3-on-3. Perhaps some poetic justice, because if you recall, a month ago, the Predators lost in 3-on-3 overtime when the Wild allegedly were about to score on a dislodged net. So how funny it was to see Steven Stamkos score the game winner on a dislodged net, an imminent scoring opportunity, according to the NHL rulebook. So the Predators win 2-1. They've won 4 out of 5. And I'll tell you, Willie, it's been interesting watching and listening and reading Predators discourse within the fan base on what's been going on over the past week and a half. Because if you recall, Barry Trotz did an interview with Greg Rusinski of ESPN.com. The story published last Tuesday, but he spoke to Rusinski last Monday before the Predators lost 8-3 at home to these same Panthers. And Trotz told ESPN that, quote, the next 7 or 8 games are going to be a good indicator if the time has arrived to start having tough conversations with veteran players or if Nashville sees and still has a flicker of hope. The Predators are 4-2 since Trotz made those comments to Greg Rusinski. And I see Predators fans on social media freaking out that the Predators have been winning. And it's sort of a double-edged blade, if you will. On one hand, look, the Predators haven't been winning much. The Titans sure as hell haven't been winning much. There hasn't been a lot to cheer for the professional teams in town, the major professional teams. I have to emphasize major professional teams before somebody texts me about Nashville SC. But there hasn't been a lot to cheer for with the Predators and Titans as of late. So I like watching a winning product. So good on the Predators for winning 4 out of 5. But on the other hand, Willie, there are a lot of Predators fans who, again, are freaking out that Barry Trotz is going to drastically change his plan because the Predators have started to win. So it's been fun to sit back and watch Predators fans have this sort of existential crisis about the team winning as of late.
Well, that means they care. So I don't have any problem with that. I would be disappointed if, you know, nobody was tweeting, nobody was calling our show, nobody was texting our show about the Predators. To me, this is what it's all about, to follow a team and go ride the ups and downs on what you think is going to work and what's not. I try to keep that in mind, regardless of what twists and turns happen within a season. So, Adam, when is the trading deadline?
Off the top of my head, I don't know. I can look it up. I'm going to guess it's sometime in early mid-March. No, it's not.
Is it next week?
No, it's not next week, Willie.
Is it Christmas?
No, it's not next. It's not Christmas.
Is it January 1st?
No, Willie, it's not.
Is it February 1st?
No.
So they have a little time, is my point, right? They don't have to figure this out today. Let's just see where it goes. Look, Barry Trotz was on the record 2 years ago. Before they had the U2 thing and the 16-0-2, he was going to make seller trades. He was moving in that direction. But it's a good thing he didn't, because then they went 16-0-2 and it was a fun season. And they had a really legit shot to win a round or two in the playoffs.
March 6th is the NHL trade deadline.
March 6th. So we have weeks, right?
We have months, not just weeks. We have months.
Right, but weeks to even just see where it goes. It's still unlikely that this team is going to make the playoffs. But as you mentioned, if you just take a look at the standings, it's not as bunched as the East. But it's not like there's this humongous separation between the teams that are in the wild card spots and the teams that are just below. So it's not like they would have to win 15 out of 17 to even get close. If they were to become a more consistent team, and the analytics, Adam, I know it bores people sometimes, and it doesn't always pass the eye test, but the analytics are still much more encouraging this year than they were last year. And you still sit there and you go, Roman Josi hasn't hit his stride offensively yet as far as production. You know, Philip Forsberg's been in a little bit of a slump. So they're still looking at what they have. It's still way more likely than not that they're going to be sellers. And that's fine if that's where it goes. But the point is, enjoy what happens. That was their best game of the year last night. That was the most fun game. It's a great it's just a great accomplishment. D-Mace, you know this as a team. You get buried. You get embarrassed 8-3. You play the same team a week and a half later. And in the locker room, that's your challenge as an athlete, as a competitor. Let's see if we can do better this time. And they played a really good game, and they got a win. So that's just let's let them have that fun, and let's just see where it goes. And they'll decide what's going on with the selling and buying soon enough.
April in Portland on our text line says, I know I'm in the minority. I want to win every game. And April, I don't blame you. Again, as Willie just said, and I agree, last night's game was a lot of fun. There haven't been too many of those games around here for the Predators since the start of last season. It was an edge-of-your-seat type of game. So that's great. I want to watch winning hockey, but I understand Predators fans getting a little nervous, despite the fact that the NHL trade deadline is 3 months away. I know that some Predators fans, are getting nervous about what this could mean long-term. Justin in Greenbrier says, can't please some people. If these veteran players have finally started to gel with some of the young talent, then good for them. This is what we have all been waiting for. And Steven Stamkos has been playing better. 4 goals, 6 points in his past 5 games. Ryan O'Reilly, 3 goals, 8 points in his past 5 games. So those players are playing well. If you want to look at it from one perspective, they're boosting their stock, so to speak, for potential buyers, if that's one way you want to look at it. So I see it from both sides. I understand the Predators fans who like the team winning because you're a fan of the team. You want them to succeed. I can see it from the other perspective. Predators fans are tired of being stuck in the mushy middle. They want to bottom out. Some of them want to bottom out. I don't want to speak for everybody. Some of them want the Predators to bottom out so they'll be forced to rebuild. Maybe they can draft number one overall. Maybe they can get the next Connor McDavid or Austin Matthews or Connor Bedard or Macklin Celebrini. I can see it from both angles. But I, as I was watching the game last night and I was looking at the reaction afterwards, there was plenty of, hey, this is great, they're on a roll. And then the other half was, oh no, this is bad, they're on a roll. So I just had to chuckle to myself.
I mean, what more? I get some fans wanting, because it's sort of like the Titans. It's, do people actually want to see the Titans win the last four games and go into the, or five games and go into the offseason with some momentum? I'm sure there's a bunch of people who are like, no, don't let that happen. And I'm sure there are people on the other side, you know, Predator fans, because of, you know, where this team is at, would love to have a top pick. And, you know, when they start to play like this, which is good for the organization, I think the fan base is like, ooh, do we really want that to happen? It's great, but are they going to be able to do enough to get into the playoffs? And then once they get into the – if indeed that happens, then what? You know, now you've set yourself back even further. But, I mean, listen, in this business, when you can win games, win them. Because those players are not worried about who you're drafting, you know, at the top or where you're drafting. Those guys are worried about their job, and they're worried about, you know, trying to make this team the best team possible.
One texter says, before we go to break, one texter says, I hope Marcia So goes on March the 6th. Ha ha! Ayo! Got him, texter. 615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on the Predators, who won last night in Florida 2-1 in overtime. 4 wins in 5 games for the Predators, who are back in action tomorrow in Raleigh against the Hurricanes. A 6 p.m. Central puck drop, 5 p.m. pregame, excuse me, right here on 102.5 The Game. But coming up next, Mitch Light of The Athletic will join us. We will talk college football. It is conference championship weekend. We'll talk about all of that and more with our friend Mitch Light. Coming up next, 615-737-1025. Our show will be broadcasting live this Monday at the all-new Circa Sportsbook Kentucky inside the Mint Gaming Hall prior to the Monday Night Football matchup between the Eagles and the Chargers. Looking for a good spot to watch NFL games this Sunday? Well, come by Twin Peaks in Cool Springs, home of the 29-degree beer, and join 102.5 The Game for the pregame show before the Titans take on the Browns. The pregame show is brought to you by Parman Tractor and Equipment and Old National Bank. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Let's go to our phone line.
Jukebox alert. It's Friday. Who's got the music today?
You do, Willie.
Okay, so pay special attention. That was from Motown for you, D-Mace. Jack White, Detroit guy and Nashville guy. He actually lives in Nashville, I think, still, but Detroit roots.
There we go.
Well, let's bring in Mitch Light of The Athletic on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Hi, Mitch. How are you?
I'm doing well, and I don't know, I don't even know if Willie knows this, but when I was a young teenager, for some reason, we had a jukebox in our house. And if Willie could see the 80s one-hit wonders and the 80s song we had, I think he'd be more happier than if, like, you threw a box of 80s baseball cards at him. We had just classics in there.
Oh, man, it sounds like a great party, Mace. I mean, Mitch, to get over there and have baseball cards in the jukebox, I mean, that's my kind of show right there.
It's exactly. So yeah, I wish I really would have taken a picture of all like 80 songs that we had on there, and it was glorious. But I don't think you guys had me on to talk 80s music. So,
Mitch, if there's two things that I love, one, it's chaos, and two, it's Duke. So Duke winning the ACC title tomorrow against UVA, I think, would throw the college football playoff into maximum chaos. So double the pleasure. For me, part of me wonders, Mitch, if ACC Commissioner Jim Phillips is going to wear a UVA shirt underneath his suit tomorrow because of what it could mean for the ACC if Duke wins and possibly gets shut out of the CFP. How likely do you think that is if Duke wins, that zero ACC representatives make the 12-team field?
My guess is he's wearing Virginia boxers, a little more subtle.
Okay, fair enough.
It's a fun storyline to talk about, but I do not envision that happening. If Duke wins, for all of the making fun of Duke, and rightfully so, losing to UConn 7-5 record, they will have a win over Virginia on their resume. And if you look at James Madison's schedule strength and the teams they've beat, like, I don't have it in front of me. Louisville's like the only top 80 team or whatever they've played. Now, they played them pretty well. I think it would have to be a huge difference in the two teams in all the metrics for the committee to put a second G5 team over the ACC championship game winner. And I think if Duke wins this game, I think it won't be close. Like, I don't think the gap would be big enough like stumbling through this, I think Duke will play in the college football playoff if they beat Virginia. But I don't think they will beat Virginia, but I think they would make the playoff.
The Big Ten title game tomorrow, undefeated Indiana versus undefeated Ohio State. What is the Hoosiers' path to victory against the Buckeyes tomorrow?
Yeah, it's a fun game. Obviously, two undefeated teams. Is it the game of the century like it would have been in a 4-team playoff era? Maybe not, although you could argue the loser would still go there. It's going to be all the cliches. They can't turn the ball over. Like, look at the Oregon game. Their biggest win in the Kurt Cignetti era, they threw a pick six and were still good enough to overcome that on the road. They're not good. No one's good enough to do that against Ohio State. Ohio State's the most complete team. They're the most balanced team. The emergence of Bo Jackson, their freshman running back, whose real name is Lamar Jackson, so he's either Bo Jackson or Lamar Jackson. It gives them some offensive balance, maybe not like we saw last year with their backfield. I just think Ohio State's too good. They can't turn it over. But I'm interested, just like all of us, to see, because we know it's not like last year where, like, is Indiana really good? We know Indiana's good. They've proven it. But are they good enough to play with Ohio State? We're going to find out. My guess is no, but I don't think they're going to get blown out.
Now, Mitch, I'm sure everybody's looking at that game and they're saying, well, Ohio State, you just said Ohio State's the best team in the country, at least the talent-wise. But how far, if Indiana beats Ohio State, does Ohio State drop out of the top four, or do they stay, you know, ranked high in a scenario like that? Because you got a team that's facing the number two team in the country. How far can they realistically drop? But if you base it on what the committee has done in prior weeks, it could be a pretty significant drop for Ohio State if indeed they do lose to Indiana, or vice versa, if Indiana lose to Ohio State.
Yeah, it's interesting, because if you want to look at their resume, if they lose this game, you say, okay, who's their best win? It's Texas, probably, not a playoff team. They beat Penn State. Penn State's not very good. They won at Washington, decent win. So they wouldn't have any really good wins in their resume. But at some point, you just got to be a football observer and know that they're probably still the best team in the country. In all their metrics and all their computer, all the stuff, they're still going to be really high. So my guess is they would drop to 3 or 4, but and still get a bye. Conversely, if Ohio State blows out Indiana, that would be my concern. If I'm the Big Ten, like, does Indiana drop from 2 to 5 if they get blown out? I don't see a scenario where Ohio State drops out of the top four.
Do you think Vandy suffered a little bit from what Indiana did? Now, Indiana still got into the college football playoffs last year, but people still question whether Indiana was a good team. They came back the next following year, and look what they are at. So people truly believe in what Cignetti is doing. Do you think that's the same thing with Clark Lee and his team? Even though last year was a good year, this year was a much better, a great year, it's next year is going to be the year for Vandy when you're talking about committees.
Yeah, that's a great question. I've kind of come around on this a little bit, because unlike you, Derek, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, and I've kind of downplayed the whole, oh, they're getting no respect. I've come around on a little bit where it's just, I don't know if it's the committee. Like, I think most people that watch football and most fans can look at Vanderbilt and say, that's probably a top 10 team. Mm-hmm. They're good enough. They played with teams. Their losses are, quote unquote, good losses. But I don't know, in that committee room, is it taking some people some time to come around on them? Like, I get that all the points make about team, you know, did they beat Tennessee too bad? Tennessee mm-hmm. falls out. Like, this isn't really your question. But, like, the committee, I want to have faith in the committee, because you can poke holes in Vanderbilt's resume. You can say they haven't beaten the top 25 team. I get all that. But when you listen to the people that are doing the rankings, and they credit Alabama for being gutsy on fourth down and credit them for a big win on the road at a rival at Auburn, but don't credit Vanderbilt for a big win, a dominant win on the road at a rival, you kind of question the thinking there. So I don't know if I really answered your question. I think it's part of that is why Vanderbilt's not in the field. Mm-hmm. Part of it is just bad luck. They picked a bad year to be really good. I think this resume would have gotten them in last year. It probably would get them in next year. Just the way the math worked out with so many two-loss teams, and the way their schedule worked out with the, they really didn't have enough marquee games. They lost the Alabama game.
and they lost the Texas game. So it's just it's a little bit of everything, in my opinion.
But isn't it saying something when, because we talked about this yesterday, when a voice like Nick Saban, and I know Nick, you know, after he said what he said weeks later, he finally said, hey, Vandy's, they're a damn good team. They're a good team. But when Nick comes out and still has that apprehension on really believing, you know, Vanderbilt has turned that corner, when he says that on national television, doesn't that sort of persuade the committee? Because you're talking about a guy that is probably the most powerful coach in college football, and he ain't even coaching.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair point, and it kind of shoots a hole in my anti-conspiracy theory to a degree.
Yes.
There's a sentiment in some people, and I'm the same way when I was sports. There could be a basketball team that comes out of nowhere, and you're like, oh, they're not very good. They're not very good, when they might, in fact, be good. I want to say one more thing about, like, resume and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I think Oklahoma is a good example. Like, I think Vanderbilt's just as good or better than Oklahoma. Oklahoma has an elite defense. Vanderbilt has an elite offense. Oklahoma has won two huge road games. Well, maybe winning at Tennessee is not a huge road game, according to the committee. I take that back. They've won two road games in which they were badly outgamed, but they won the games. That's the object of the sport. They won the games. Their resume is better than Vanderbilt's. I think Vanderbilt might be a better team. That's Vanderbilt's problem. Even though the teams we think they might be better than, those teams, by certain degrees, have better resumes.
Mitch, before we get to Willie, will you ask him if Hunter Yurecek is on his Christmas card list?
Hunter Yurecek did himself no favors. That's a thankless job. He's been, and my colleague Bruce Feldman has far harsher words for Hunter Yurecek in the committee than I do. But it really you lose faith in humanity when someone goes on ESPN and answers questions the way like he does.
No question about it, Mitch. And don't get me started, right? I'm trying to get over it. But, Mitch, I think this is the point. If you, because you're on the hot seat when you're, and you can't win because you have to explain why two or three teams that are deserving in a given year can't get in. We've seen it for decades, right? C.M. Newton was the guy on the committee chair for the NCAA basketball tournament for a long time. Different people. Most of them handle it as about as well as you can. But Hunter Yurecek, that was a new low for me. The justification of, well, they don't have a signature win because Tennessee has been knocked out of the top 25. It just made there's no logic. Like, I want to hear the argument, how tough it was to separate them, and why they separate him. It's okay, right? Somebody's got to be unhappy. I could live with that. But he made up some stuff that made absolutely no sense. And how does he think that's going to float past anybody who has a brain?
That's why you're mad. That's why Clark Lee's mad. That's why I'm mad. College football fans, we can handle a rational discussion, irrational reasons. We can't handle someone going up there who's powerful. He's on the committee. He's the committee chair, who clearly does not know what he's talking about or is not good at explaining things. And this is not his fault, because I think it's a committee parameter or whatever, but what is so magical about top 25? Like, it's like if you beat the number 26 team, you suck. Excuse my language. If you beat the number 24 team, you're a 2 seed. Like, it's just, it's not the way sports work. You just look at good team, not good team. Why is that such a delineation? And I have a theory. Sorry to keep rambling on. I have a theory about why these committee members do not do well on TV. Like, it's not their job. Like, not that I'm, like, the most well-spoken or you guys are, but, you're on the radio for a living. You have to, before you say something and before the show, you have to think about what you're going to say. As Willie knows, in my previous job at Athlon Sports, I did tons of interviews talking about rankings. I thought about things. I knew what I was talking about. I could speak about all the stuff rationally. These guys are athletic directors. They do interviews talking about Arkansas and whatever, but they don't have to go in front of them, get in front of a microphone and smartly talk about rankings and teams. They do it 4 or 5 times a year, and they don't do it very well. Maybe my theory is dumb, but I just think like he probably has a big ego and is like, I'll just get on there and start talking about these teams, and doesn't realize that he's not making sense.
But it also, I would take it one step further. I think they know how tough it is, the committee as a whole, and I'm not singling out Yurecek, who has to be the spokesperson. But it seems like they look for ways to simplify it. How do I keep Vanderbilt out of the discussion? Because it gets complicated if I've got to really put Vanderbilt in the same box with Oklahoma, like you were talking about, Oklahoma's resume versus Vanderbilt's versus Notre Dame versus all these teams. If you were to just start the process, if you had started that on Tuesday and hadn't had this week-to-week where you've got to have all these discussions, to me it would be a very different perspective. But instead, I feel like in that late in the game, and you had Vanderbilt make this huge argument, they put it all on paper, they sent it to the committee and said, take a fresh look at this. Look at things in a new way. But it was almost as if they went the other way, saying, oh, boy, that's pretty complicated, man. Those are big numbers. Let me find a couple of numbers that just makes it easy for us to say, oh, Vanderbilt, they're not quite there.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. And the thing is, they say they start from scratch every week, which
that's
is
baloney.
BS. Because like, if they just came up with something radically different, how would they explain that? Like, how would they say a team going from
right? That's I think they think about that. I would have to explain that, and that would be hard. People would be critical of that. So why try? Let's just go off of what we did last week.
For all the people that complain about the weekly rankings, it's ESPN's fault if you want to blame. They want the show. They want the rankings. They pay so much money for this college football playoff. They want the show. Most people in college football, like powers that do not like this, do not like they do it. But it gets good ratings. It gets people like us mad. We start talking about it. It's good pub for college football. So these shows aren't going anywhere. And it's not like Hunter Yurchak decided to get his buddies together to have this weekly show. It's like ESPN is mandating this.
So Mitch, again, you're not a conspiracy theorist, but I think you're level-headed. You study this stuff. It really does appear that the TV ratings and the audience that you would have when Notre Dame plays as opposed to Vanderbilt does influence people. It just seems like it.
I disagree with that. SMU made the field over Alabama last year. Yes. SMU made the field over Alabama last year. They've already paid billions for this. A couple games of Notre Dame or Vanderbilt versus someone isn't gonna move the needle. Like, it moves the needle as far as maybe a specific ranking. I would argue, though, if you want to be a conspiracy theorist, wouldn't you want Diego Pavia in Vanderbilt? I mean, maybe not over Notre Dame, but aren't they a better story than Oklahoma? Or, I mean, Oklahoma's got a big fan base. So I you could tell me I'm wrong. I'm an idiot. I 100% do not believe that Notre Dame – maybe, like, it's brand recognition. It's the – they can't get past the Notre Dame. I was going to say the logo on their helmet, but they don't have a logo on their helmet versus Vanderbilt.
The boldness.
But I don't think it's, we need the ratings would be better. I 100% disagree with that. I understand if people want to disagree with me.
But there seems to be a benefit of the doubt for Notre Dame, and you always have to do this with them because they're not in a conference. But their schedule was weak, and they were never questioned about quality wins or anything like that. They just – hey, they're number nine. So how do you get around that?
I don't know. I'm going to steal an old Kevin Stallings phrase. I don't know if you ever heard this. He used to say, the problem with officials is they're human. Meaning, when Vanderbilt or if Kent State's playing Kentucky and two guys are going for a shot, and the official in the back of his mind, he's like, the Kentucky guy probably didn't foul, or the Kentucky guy probably got fouled. It's like, it's just kind of what Derek was getting at earlier. It's just in the committee. They've been watching Notre Dame football for 30 years. They've been watching Vanderbilt football for 30 years. It's tough to get past the Vanderbilt might be better than Notre Dame hurdle. I don't think it's anything to do with, Notre Dame rankings, ratings, all that stuff. I just think they started off with Notre Dame high, giving them benefit of the doubt for those two close losses, and then that's where they were ranked high, and they haven't dropped.
Mitch Light of The Athletic has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donaghy joins us every week during college football season. Mitch, as always, a pleasure. Enjoy watching all of the conference championship games this weekend.
Go Cavs.
Mm-mm.
Have a good weekend.
If you want to be invited back, you should change that.
Do you promise? If I would have known that, I would have said anti-Duke stuff like 2 months ago.
Oh, that hurts, Mitch. That hurts. Have a good weekend, my friend. 615-737-1025. I read an interesting article on ESPN.com that posed the question, college football's new era of parity has arrived, but is it here to stay? Let's discuss that coming up next. 615-737-1025. DVD is presented by Bax Homeworks, remodeling done right. Get a free estimate now at baxhomeworks.com. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025. The game, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Conference championship weekend in college football. And there are a lot of non-traditional teams, I guess you could say, playing in these games. And what I mean by that, Indiana in the Big Ten title game against Ohio State is not a traditional powerhouse. UVA in the ACC title game against Duke is not a traditional powerhouse. Texas Tech in the Big 12 title game against BYU is not a traditional powerhouse. Of course, we saw what Vanderbilt, also not a traditional powerhouse, was able to accomplish this season, the best season in program history at 10-2. And it's led many to wonder, including David Hale and Mark Schlabach at ESPN, about whether this new era of parity in college football is here to stay. And here is something, guys, that I found from a different but related story that I thought was fascinating from the Washington Post. Teams in the preseason top 15 went 126-54 in the regular season. The second worst winning percentage for programs ranked that high in the preseason poll over the past four decades. Five of those top 15 teams won seven games or fewer: Penn State, Clemson, LSU, South Carolina, and Florida. Three fired their coaches before the end of October: Penn State, LSU, and Florida. So, Willie, as we watch Indiana, we watch UVA, we watch Texas Tech, we watch Vanderbilt have these tremendous seasons that are not common for these schools, do you think that this is going to become the norm, or is this just a blip in the radar?
Well, first of all, Adam, I'm very disappointed you didn't comment on my latest song.
I'm sorry.
Chris Stapleton, I mean, having no fun with the playlist. That is cutting-edge material. That was out to Ryan O'Reilly. Chris Stapleton, just as bad as I used to be. Ryan O'Reilly, of course, guitar player. And I'm told he was the guy that sort of got that song on the Predators warm-up. He's a big fan. But he played a great game last night. So there's a story behind these cutting-edge songs,
okay,
Adam. So
I will be listening more closely.
Yes. Look for that. There's one up D-Mace's alley coming up as well.
Okay.
But look, I think anybody who like sports, I think, would love to see an evolution and a continuation of what we're seeing early on. I remember asking Mitch this a few years ago when NIL started, and his theory is that the top powers who have the most resources, they'll only get better at knowing how to use the resources effectively. So that is a fear that I have, that the rich, the ones that have the most will figure it out. It's kind of like the Dodgers figured it out in baseball. The Mets haven't figured it out. Like the Dodgers and Mets have a lot of resources. The Mets are trying to become the Dodgers. They're not there. But like when a team that has the most resources also is really smart, there's nothing anybody can do, right? That's kind of where the Dodgers are right now. And so that's what I fear is the one side. But I do think it gives hope to a lot of teams that maybe didn't have a chance before in the old system, that you have a fighting chance now if you're smart with your resources.
Yeah, I think ultimately what happens here is that, you think, you know, schools are going to figure it out and get loopholes. That's why I think that whoever is going to set these parameters and rules moving forward, they need to be set as such, there isn't a clear-cut advantage for any team. Now, if you can raise the money, you can raise the money, but I think there should be a cap. I mean, across the board, no outside money, no, well, we can finagle it this way. That's why the NFL has been able to persevere or last as long as it has and has become the dominant sport in America and one of the dominant sports across the globe is because they figured it out. They figured out a way where parity is the biggest advantage they have going for them. And it would be wise if college football figures that out sooner rather than later, because even though we're having these conversations about, you know, Indiana or Vanderbilt or even Texas Tech to that matter, because the article addressed, you know, these three teams. Even though we're having the conversations, if they don't do what's necessary to make sure you're going to have more of these teams come forward than not, then they need to set some rules in place. Because, listen, if you don't set them, eventually those with the most money will find loopholes in whatever they're doing. But if you set some hard rules, like the NFL has done, and it has led, it's been tested and tried and true. If unless you do that, then, yeah, like you said, they're always going to find a loophole because I can pay more money in other ways that sort of circumvent what we have in place. But they need to put in some – if they truly want parity, and I know – and I'm talking about parity when you're talking about the power, you know, power five or power, whatever they call themselves now, the four. If they want true parity in that, they need to set up the rules so that every team – can benefit, not just Alabama, not just Georgia, or you have a Vanderbilt every once in a while, or Texas Tech every once in a while. No, they need to make sure these, because it's good for the sport when there's parity. This has become professional sports. And in professional sports, football, meaning the NFL, parity, we love it. That's what keeps us coming back every year, because I think my team has a chance. If you don't think your team has a chance, you're not going to watch it. So if college football is true to what they're trying to do, they need to establish some rules to make sure parity, so these other Alabama, Ohio State, whoever, can't get, you know, an upper hand on maybe a Vanderbilt because they're using loopholes.
It's about sustainability. As you said, Willie, Vanderbilt can't compete with Ohio State or Texas, for example, in terms of financial resources.
Well, you can if you put things in place. Damn the fuck. Listen, there's a bunch of money out there.
Vanderbilt doesn't have deep-pocketed boosters.
Yes, they do. They do got them. Yes, they do. There's a lot of money here. What do you? They just haven't. The football isn't rich in tradition. Mm-hmm. If Vanderbilt was like Ohio State when it comes to football, oh yeah, everybody would be donating. But because they haven't, now you're trying to get those people that have the deep pockets to now donate because Clark Lee and Kansas believe in what they're doing.
That's fair. Jared Curtis decommitting from Georgia to go to Vanderbilt is definitely a win for the little guys, mm-hmm. so to speak, right? Curtis would have never left Georgia for mm-hmm. Vanderbilt if he didn't think Vanderbilt could win and win consistently. So perhaps that is a mark toward this parity that we're all hoping we can see in college football. The other interesting part of this article too, Willie, is go back to when James Franklin left Vanderbilt for Penn State. At that time, Vanderbilt was a feeder for the top schools, right? Players were going to transfer out and go to the top schools. James Franklin knew that he had probably reached his limit at Vanderbilt, so he had to go to Penn State in order to take the next step. Clark Lee, look, he got a big contract. He's going to want to stay here. He loves Nashville. He's from Nashville. But Clark Lee isn't the only coach in his realm. Like Kurt Cignetti, for example. Kurt Cignetti could have gone to Penn State. He decided to stay at Indiana. I think that will help as well. These coaches in these so-called, let me use the basketball term for just a moment, the mid-majors. It's not a perfect comparison, but it's just the one that came to mind. Clark Lee, Kirk Cignetti, other coaches for those sorts of schools can feel like they can win where they are. They don't have to go somewhere else to win, which I think will help as well.
I think that is true, and I think one of the benefits, I heard Nick Saban talk about this a lot, the week that game day was in Nashville. And Nick Saban is so good at talking about these things. But he, because the, you know, all of the stuff was going on at LSU. And he was saying, if a coach knows who he answers to and is comfortable with the people around him, it's a lot easier to deal with all of the volatility of the roster, right? The transfers, the NIL, the people that are providing the resources for the NIL. There's so many layers to it. And so I think there's an argument to be made now going forward that going with what you know, as opposed to what Lane Kiffin did, he's going into a complete unknown. Who are the people he answers to at LSU? We don't even know who the athletic director is going to be, or is it the governor? What about all the people that are donating for NIL? Who controls that? Like, that's going to be new for Lane Kiffin. I'm sure they vetted some of this as he was making the decision, but you see what I mean. He gets a new set of variables that he's going to have to maneuver through to see if it's worth it or not. So I do think that if you have a good system in place, you understand the system, you have confidence that you can have success where you are.
615-737-1025 will take your thoughts on conference championship weekend in college football. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we'll switch gears to the Tennessee Titans. Of course, the major storyline of Sunday's game between the Titans and Browns is Cam Ward versus Shedeur Sanders, and we'll get into that. But there's another wrinkle to this game that I think is worth discussing, and we will do that coming up next. 615-737-1025. This holiday season, 1025 The Game is looking out for the kiddos. We want to donate a bunch of stuffed toys to the Nashville Children's Alliance to be given to kids this holiday, but we can't do it without you. Join us at a Dunkin' location near your neighborhood the week of December 8th through the 12th, that's next week, to drop off a stuffed toy that the child will love. Find the Dunkin' locations that are participating at thegamenashville.com/toy. We would also like to thank the Metro Nashville Police Department, the Catalano Group, the Bluemont Group, Family Leisure, Thompson Machinery, Richmar Florist, Right Time HVAC, and Relidyne.